Well, hello everyone, this is Rob Plevin from Behaving Aids. If you can hear me, just hit hi there in the question box and we'll see who we've got on the call. Okay, hi Terry, hi Jennifer, John, Anne, Hazel, Lindsay, Chum, Mary, Megan, well it's going fast now, Tammy, Catherine, hi everyone. Great to hear you. Well, great to see your names, I should say. I can't actually hear you. If you can hear me, just, or if you can't hear me very clearly, just let me know in the question box there. If the sound's okay, just put sound's okay. Wonderful. Okie dokie. Brilliant. Okay, I'm going to make a start in about 30 seconds. Hi, Paul, Karen, Tammy, Megan, Andrew. Apologies if I miss your names. There's so many come through. I can't see everyone's. Just passes so quick. Hi, Donna. A lot of familiar names there. Hi, Anne, Olga, Katarina. Okay, doggy. Okay, let's make a start. My name is Rob Plevin. It's my absolute pleasure to bring you another free webinar for teachers and lecturers through the Classroom Expert website. Just to remind you to turn off any email programs, Skype programs, that kind of thing, which are going to disrupt your viewing pleasure. Feel free, in fact, I would advise you to take notes because there's going to be a lot of information being shared on the call. And feel free to ask me questions. You can send questions through the question box and I'll record them as we go through the call, and if relevant, I'll pass them on to Sue either throughout the presentation or we'll save them for the end. Okay, so if you have any problems or queries, just send them to me in the question box and I'll do my best to answer them during the webinar. Now, just to remind, just to tell those of you that haven't been on these calls before, we do actually have two memberships which provide replay packs for all our webinars. That's all our past webinars and current webinars. And in those replay packs, you get a transcript of the call, you get the MP3, MP4 recording, and you also get a certificate of attendance and other resources that are shared on the webinar. If you aren't familiar with those, we've got one called Lessonology. And in Lessonology, as well as all the webinars and the replay packs, you get starters and plenaries and cooperative active learning activities, all kinds of teaching tips. You can see there are some videos for using magic in lessons, all kinds of fun ideas for making your lessons that bit more engaging. So that's lesson-ology. And that's available through behaviourneeds.com/member. As well as that, we have behaviourology. It used to be called Confident Classroom Management just to confuse people. But to keep in lessonology, we've now changed the name to behaviourology. And that one is focused on behaviour management tools and resources. So within there, we've got the needs-focused classroom management system, which is full of videos and tutorials and PDFs and different resources, as well as a behaviour toolbox with lots of additional resources in for solving problems in the moment. We've got some bonus content in there, some surprise bonus content, and various special reports, as well, of course, as all the webinars and the replay packs. Now, if you want to get either of those, you just go to behaviourneeds.com/member and you will automatically get all the replays for all our past webinars, so you don't need to worry about attending the live ones or missing out on them. We do make replays freely available for up to 5 days after the live event. So the live events are free to attend and we do a replay for about 5 days afterwards. But in case you miss those or you're worried about missing future ones because we've got some fantastic webinars coming up, then obviously the membership is available. Right, I'll just go back a couple of slides and share with you some questions which hopefully we'll get time to answer. These were left on the webinar information page for this particular webinar, so we'll try and get some of these answered at the end of the call. Can't promise we'll answer all of them, but if we have time we'll get some answered. And I'll just tell you, let's go on to today's presentation. Now then, our speaker today is a very experienced trainer, having been a regular feature on the Teachers TV website, which some of you may be familiar with. It's not actually running anymore, although all the videos are available on different websites. She's also a behaviour management expert and the author of some very well-known books for teachers. One of them I'm sure most of you will have heard of. You may even have a copy. I know that a lot of you have got a copy. I've certainly got a copy, and I've been getting a lot of emails from people who say they love this book, and that is Getting the Buggers to Behave, a tremendous seller, and a tremendous book with some very creative ideas, which I had early on in my career. I had when it first came out, I got the first volume and absolutely loved that book. But you can see there, Sue's also the author of her teaching clinic, How to Survive Your First Year in Teaching, The Guerrilla Guide to Teaching, Teaching Skills for Dummies, and the Dummies series only take on very reputable authors, as well as the behavior management videos, DVDs you can see there at the bottom of the screen. So we're basically in very safe hands today. Sue's got a lot of great ideas to share, and I know you're all going to get an awful lot from this call. I've been particularly looking forward to this. So without further ado, I'm going to pass you over to Sue. Just bear with me a moment while I change the presenter over. Sue, are you there?
I can hear you, but I can't see your slides. I don't know if that's a problem.
Let me just check before I pass this over, just to make sure people are seeing my slides. The rest of you, can you see my slides? Just hit a yes or no. Yes, okay, we are showing them. So I'll pass this over to you, and we'll see if we can see yours, and hopefully there won't be any glitches. So I'll pass this over to you now. You should get a link there, Sue, saying become the presenter.
Hang on a sec. Sorry. Okay, you're the presenter. Yeah.
Great stuff.
So should I click on share my screen, Rob?
Yeah, that'll be brilliant if you can.
Okay, seeing that?
We are indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, presenting Sue Cowley. Over to you, Sue. Thank you.
Hello, everybody, and a very good afternoon from the UK. It may be morning where you are. I'm going to be sharing with you today what I call the 7 C's of positive behaviour management. Basically, these are 7 sort of key principles that if you get all these in place, it's not some kind of magic solution. You won't automatically turn your students into kind of robots, which you wouldn't want anyway, but it will certainly help you in terms of managing behaviour in your classroom. And in any case, if your students just did as they were told all the time, life would be very boring indeed, wouldn't it? It's those challenges in teaching that make it fun and interesting and exciting. And of course, when they do misbehave, that forces you indeed, to become a better teacher, because you have to deal with those situations and you have to think creatively about how you're going to handle them. So I'm going to move on now to the first slide. And just kind of with Ofsted in mind, that's our inspectors here in the UK. I, of course, have some learning intentions. So my learning intentions, really, whenever I work with teachers, what they don't need, practicing teachers, is lots of theory that they need to wade through. What I want to give you today is practical things that next Monday you can go into your classroom and you can actually use them immediately. When I first started writing books for teachers, there was a kind of lack of anything in the book market that actually said to teachers, just try doing this. It was all theoretical, it was all sort of university-based stuff. And so that was kind of one of my key motivations for writing for teachers, because there are things that work, and if you share those with other teachers, then teachers become better, and that's great for everybody, including for the students. The next learning intention I've got is that I want you to focus on what you can change. Now, in teaching, there's a bit of a habit that we tend to have a moan about things. We'll moan about the inspectors, we'll moan about the management, we'll moan about the kids, we'll moan about their parents. But actually, all that moaning doesn't actually change anything for us, although it does help us manage our stress, obviously. So what today's webinar is about is things that you can change about your own style as a teacher, basically. It's not going to magically change your students overnight, but where you stick with these things sort of longer term, it will eventually start to help you form those relationships that you need with your students. Now, the next thing I wanted to do is I want to think with you about why misbehavior actually happens. Why do your students cause you problems? And, you know, we tend to think almost of students being a separate thing from us. They're the students and we're the grown-ups. But actually, if you relate their behaviour to your own behaviour, you'll see that a lot of the time, you do similar things to what they do. And perhaps when you were at school, you certainly weren't very well behaved all of the time, maybe most of the time, but certainly not all of the time. And the last of my learning intentions is that I want you to have some fun. I want you to enjoy this webinar, because if you're enjoying yourself when you're learning, then you really get the most out of it because you feel relaxed. And I think there's a danger in schools that we're so focused on progress and targets and data that we lose sight of the fact that these are young people and they like to have fun, they like to enjoy themselves. And if we can regain that sense of curiosity, of interest, of adventure, then I think we do ourselves a lot of favours. I also think if they're having fun, often they will forget to misbehave. That's not to say, however, that my approach is just let them have fun all the time, because at the same time they need self-discipline, they need to learn to work hard, they need to learn to focus. And it's about a balance, isn't it, really? I think as teachers we're always striving for a balance between getting through the learning but at the same time relaxing and enjoying ourselves. So the next slide is going to show you what my 7 C's are, in case you've been wondering. And you could probably come up with some of your own 7 C's, and they might include some other stuff, but these are my 7 C's. So to start with, we're going to think about communication. And teaching essentially is the art of communication. Teaching is only relevant if there's somebody that you're communicating with, whether it's me communicating now with you over the internet or you communicating with those young people that have stood in front of you or sat in front of you. The second C is an interesting one, particularly for newer teachers, and that's confidence. Now, when you start out teaching, you don't necessarily feel terribly confident. And equally, even when you've been teaching for a while, you may find that if you've got a class who behave really dreadfully for you, that knocks your confidence. And I've certainly been in those kind of schools myself, where you start to think, maybe I can't do this, maybe I've forgotten how to teach. So I'm going to talk to you about confidence, about how you can create an aura of confidence, even if you don't actually feel it inside. Now, my third C is a kind of double C. So we've got carrots, we've got our rewards, our motivators, make them want to do it. And equally, we've got our consequences, whether you call them sanctions, punishments, basically what happens if they misbehave. My fourth C is consistency. And this is a kind of holy grail for senior management, certainly in the UK and I guess around the world. If only my teachers would be consistent, if only they would treat all the students exactly the same. But actually, it's quite a complicated one, consistency, and I'm going to be talking about where the complications arise and also what you can do about those complications. Now, the fifth C is control. And I'm not going to be suggesting that you need to be some kind of control freak, but what I am going to be explaining to you is this is not a democracy in your classroom. Not everybody is completely equal. That's not to say that you kind of keep your students downtrodden or anything like that, but it's just to say that they want the adult to be in control, because if the adult isn't in control, then one of the students will be, or probably a group of them, and most likely it'll be the difficult ones who take over. So that's control. Then the sixth C is choice. And in this slide I'll be talking about the notion of offering your students choices about how they behave and encouraging them to see that their behaviour is their choice. It's not up to you to make them behave. You're there to teach them. It's up to them to make the right choices, but you can certainly help them learn how to do that, and you can encourage them to see what the consequences are if they do make the wrong decisions. And the final C is creativity, and this is perhaps my favourite one of all. So I think without further ado, I'll get started. At certain points during the webinar, I'll be throwing out suggestions as to activities you might do. And Rob has also suggested that I kind of ask who agrees with certain things or how many of you feel that this is a good idea. So I'll get on to the first C now, and I'll throw over some questions to you during the course of the webinar. Okay, here we go. And the first C, as I said, is communication. And what I mean by communication, of course you're communicating the learning, but when we're talking about behaviour, what you're communicating is the behaviour that you expect from your students, whether they're young children, whether they're older students, whether they're post-compulsory students. And I think the key thing here is you really have to be clear about what you want to ask for. What is it exactly that matters most to you? And let's throw out, first of all, a suggestion for an activity here. Now, when I work with teachers, and I do a lot of teacher training, I get them to, at this point, I get them to brainstorm all the things that they would want if they could have everything in the world in terms of behaviour from their students. What are all those things that they want? And they'll come up with a list of 20, 30, 40 different things that they'd really like in terms of the students' behaviour. And if perhaps after the webinar you do that and you have a look at your list and you think, well, actually, what are my priorities? Because I'm going to need to communicate those to my students. So I need to figure out for myself what my priorities are. These will be different for every teacher. So there's not one right way of doing it, and equally, you know, there's not one class, is there? You've all got different classes, different kinds of students, and you need to figure out what those key priorities are, because you're going to need to be able to communicate them to your class. Now, as I said, I do a lot of work with large groups of teachers, and I'm going to give you their three priorities that they typically, the kind of, the ones that usually come up. And then we'll take a little vote here to see who feels that theirs might be the same and who uses something different. So the three key priorities that I get from a lot of teachers tend to be, number one, something about how the students listen. Because at the heart of good teaching and good learning is the ability to listen to each other. And that's not just the students listening to the teacher. That's also the teacher listening to the students and the students listening to each other. So number one would be something like, we listen to each other carefully, or one person speaks at a time, or we always listen in silence when somebody's talking. Okay, so that might be number one. Number two, I usually get something cropping up about equipment, what the students bring to the class. So how they turn up to the class, what they bring with them, those kind of things. So it's that kind of, you can phrase it as, we arrive at class ready to learn. So that's quite a good way of phrasing it. And the third one I typically get is something about their approach to the learning. So for instance, something like, we always participate, we always try our hardest, we always take part. So those are my three. I'm going to get Rob to take a vote in a minute. So my three, and actually I pretty much agree with these three. Number one, listening. Number two, bring the right stuff along. And number three, how do you approach your work? This is how I want you to do it. So Rob, can I hand over to you and see if you can get a vote? How many of our listeners would agree with those three? And how many might use something else, something completely different?
Okay, Sue, straight away we've got lots of people agreeing with it. Very quick. Thank you very much for being so responsive, everyone. Agree, agree, agree. Listening, very important. Totally agree. You are keeping it so simple, covering so much. Fantastic. I like you already. Yes, definitely agree. Might add something like, we are kind and helpful to our classmates. I agree, but would add something about how students treat each other. I agree with listening and attitude, but would add, please follow instructions. Yes, agree, listening, showing respect. So overwhelming majority saying they agree with that, and then a few saying they would add a few others, such as treating each other nicely. So back to you.
That's great, Rob. Actually, that's very interesting, because follow instructions, which is often phrased in the UK as do as you're asked the first time you're asked, and treating each other as they would want to be treated. Those are the other two that typically, if somebody doesn't choose one of those three I mentioned, it'll be one of those other two. Now, if you do that activity where you list all your do's and don'ts, what you'll find is you do come up with a pretty big list. And I put on this slide to be realistic. How many things can you communicate at any one time? So let's do another quick straw poll, because that was quite fun to do. So the optimists in my teacher training audiences will say three. So three things to be communicated, like those three I suggested. The pessimists, or could we say the realistic people, will say one. So let's go for three. I reckon three is realistic. So should we take a vote and see how many of your listeners agree that you can communicate three expectations right at the start? Obviously you can communicate other ones later, but who would go for three in that first meeting with your class?
Again, a very quick response. Thank you, everyone. We've got three, totally agree, three, yes, three, 100% so far saying three, yes, more than three, and they tune out. I would agree with three. Three is doable, three is good. One saying depends on the class, which is a good point, I guess, but I'm going to leave that over to you, Sue. Back at you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Now, what some teachers will choose to do is they'll choose to discuss these expectations with the class. And this is very much a matter of personal taste, actually. And it also depends on the age group. I mean, if you're a secondary teacher, you might do that with year 7, but you might not do it with year 10 or 11, which is your 11-year-old, your 15, 16-year-old. So it's that kind of difference. Where you discuss with the class, I think the one kind of word of warning would be that it can make it seem to your students as though you don't really have full confidence in what you're asking for. Equally, it can be a brilliant thing to do if the students are quite tuned in to discussion and quite willing to build their own set of key principles, key expectations. So that's a real judgment call. Now, in terms of how to phrase this, this really is key to getting it right. So if you say to your class, okay guys, I need you to all listen quite quietly, because when I'm talking, I need you to listen, because otherwise if you're not listening, you're not really taking in what I'm saying, you get the message. They've tuned out, as somebody had mentioned earlier. You need to think about how to phrase what you want in a concise way. Yeah, and that's why I like if one person speaks at a time. It's five words, six words maybe, sorry. So it needs to be concise. It needs to be short enough for them to retain. You need to use vocabulary appropriate to the age group, obviously. So I work sometimes with preschoolers, sometimes with much older students. And with our preschoolers, you'd be kind of doing, okay, everybody looking this way, is everybody listening? That's lovely, great listening. Whereas if I went in with my 15-year-olds and went, okay, everybody, looking this way, they'd just think I was a complete lunatic. So the language you use needs to communicate clearly, and it needs to be appropriate for those children. Now, specific over generic. What do I mean by that? What I mean here is it's very tempting to give your students words that you know what they mean to you, but they don't necessarily mean the same thing to the students. So take care with that. Words like respect. With my first secondary class that I ever taught, if I'd said to them, I want respect, they would have looked at me and gone, ah, respect, miss, yeah, we know what you're talking about. But they didn't actually mean the same thing as I meant. So be careful with generic sort of adult level terminology. That's not to say you can't use it, but just make sure your students understand it the same way that you do. Do's, not don'ts. This is a classic one, isn't it? Tell them what you want them to do. Don't tell them what you don't want them to do. So, you know, instead of don't have your mobile phone out, phrase it as mobile phones away when we're learning. Although sometimes you might want to get them out for learning these days. So do something rather than don't do something. And try and give this feeling it's a team effort. So we're all working together to achieve this. And tell them, I only want these things because it will help you learn. It's for your learning. And the final one here, I put that you should model what you communicated. If I say to that class, I want complete silence when somebody's addressing the class, and then I talk over them, I'm not modeling it, am I? I'm saying to them effectively by my behavior that actually I don't really mean what I say. And that's perhaps the hardest thing of all, because sometimes you'll want to get on with the lesson, you'll be tired, you'll be stressed. So that kind of modeling is a long-term project. You have to teach them that you mean it, and you're going to work hard to get them to do it as well. So let's move on to the second slide, because as usual with teaching, I'm waffling away and I'm aware that Rob said about an hour. So the second slide is confidence. And there's a lovely phrase that I've been given, which is, this is how we do it here. And by having a confident aura, it's not that you're sort of being aggressive or anything. It's just, you're just saying, this is how we do it here. And I will work my damnedest to make this happen. I'm not going to allow you to destroy your own learning by your behavior. So present a confident persona. And if you don't feel confident, which a lot of the time you may not, I certainly don't always, then you pretend. It's a performance. I'm a drama teacher by trade, so you might have guessed that. So that pretend bit comes fairly easily to me. But when I get up in front of an audience, yesterday I was in front of an audience of 120 teachers. When I started talking, I didn't feel confident at all. And they were all very experienced teachers. They were all Senkos. And I had the nerves in my stomach. But if you look confident, they'll feel that they trust you. They'll feel safe and secure. Being a confident teacher is about aspects such as your posture. You stand upright, you look relaxed, you don't have your hunched over, you don't have your arms folded, those kind of things. It's also this balance between movement around the room, so you get to the back of the room, to the sides of the room. Somebody once said to me, touch all four walls and you'll be fine, you'll know you've done that whole kind of movement around the class. But equally, moments of stillness as well, I think are really important, especially when you're addressing the class. When it comes to movement, you know, be careful. If you're right-handed, next time you go into the classroom on Monday, have a think about this. If you're right-handed, you will tend to teach naturally to the right-hand side of the room. So have a look and see, have a think as you teach about whether you're including the left-hand side of the room as well. It's really quite interesting when you do it. Now, use of voice. If your voice is clear, well modulated, lots of tone, you know, you can hear in my voice now, hopefully, that, oh, I'm really excited, I'm really interested. And it's almost impossible to overdo your use of tone. Although, again, if you're working with, you know, battle-hardened 15-year-olds, you don't want to go in and go, oh, lovely piece of work. You want to kind of pitch it right for your students. And the last thing I think, which is absolutely crucial, is a sense of your passion. You love teaching, you love learning. Because if you don't, I do always wonder when I meet teachers who are a bit jaded with it all, I think, why would you put yourself through it? It's such hard work being a teacher. It requires such dedication that surely you owe it to yourself to do it because you love it. And Rob, if we can take a quick straw poll here, I'd love to know how many of our audience, I bet it's 100%, how many of them still feel passionate about teaching? They feel that they want to make a difference.
Sue, I'm going to say...
Yes, I want to make a difference. Is that?
Before the answers even come, they're already coming in, but I was just going to say you'll get 100% from the people on these calls. I know from the people who are regularly on that they just love teaching, they're so passionate, and yes, 100%. Yes, I do definitely love it. I want to do it forever. I love it more than I ever thought I would. Yeah, they're a very passionate bunch on Classroom Expert.
That's great. I just wanted a bit of, you know, it's nice to have that boost, because occasionally you do meet people who've, you know, clearly had enough, often caused by aspects like Ofsted and marking and workload and that kind of thing. But it's important to keep that passion. Now, create a confident classroom. I think your classroom really matters because it creates a perception for your students. So, you know, put that code of conduct up on the wall. And if you really need to hammer home the messages, then what you can do, what I did once, I had this huge drama studio with massive walls. They were really tall. It was quite, acoustically, it was quite a difficult room. And my classes were challenging, as we say in teaching. And so at one time, at half term, I went in there and I made massive words like confidence, cooperation, consideration. And I literally, I had to get a ladder the size of a house to get the top bit of the words up on the walls. But it's that impact you're after. When they come in, oh, wow, there's, you know, what's this teacher saying to us? So, you know, think about how you display your expectations. Keep things tidy and well organized, and that might just mean shuffle all your papers into one giant pile which off the to-do pile, as teachers say. But, you know, that just gives a sense that you're not a bit chaotic, you're kind of in control. And think about the way your classroom's laid out. I mean, this can have a huge impact on behaviour and learning. And if you read any of my books, this is often something I talk about quite a lot of length. You know, if your classroom's overly noisy, is it something to do with the layout that's causing it? You know, what can I change about my layout to improve behaviour? And then confident lessons. So what I like to do, it sounds a bit crazy, but I like to run my lessons through like they're a bit of a movie. So ahead of time, because when you're planning something, it's quite hard to figure out how it will work in your classroom. So run it through in your head ahead of time. Have a sense of what am I going to say at this point? Okay, how am I going to handle the resourcing? You know, how am I going to let the students know what they're learning here? Am I clear? Because if I'm not clear and confident, then they won't be. Resource with care. If you are using anything related to technology, plan for it not working. I would like to think that I could do any of my lessons without the computer working, because I think a lesson is about the teacher-student relationship. It's not about the student relationship to technology, even though that's very important and so on. I think it's about, you know, resourcing in a multi-sensory way as well as the technology. And a sense of pace and momentum, which you can do with your voice. And that will make the students feel that they're getting through stuff, they're learning something, they're really getting something out of this lesson. At the same time, though, I fully acknowledge that there'll be days when you can barely crawl into the classroom. So, you know, pace and momentum when you've got it, but other times balance that with a quieter session. Okay, on to the next C. So the next C is carrots and consequences. And a question I ask teachers here, and something you might like to go away and think about after this webinar. Why is it that you turn up for work every day? Now, teachers always laugh when I ask them that, because obviously the first thought to mind is, well, it pays my rent, my mortgage, and, you know, those kind of things. But of course, that's not their key motivation. That's not to say they do it for nothing, but certainly there are many other things going on, aren't there? It's the joy of it, it's working with colleagues, it's the creativity for some, it's the challenge for others. So, you know, what truly motivates you? Now, what truly motivates your students? For some of them, it will be the joy of learning, those kind of things. But for others, you'll need to have this kind of extrinsic set of rewards. And here, I'm just going to talk briefly about what I call the marshmallow effect. So what that means is that there was this experiment in Stanford University in the 1960s. And what they did is they took a group of children and they experimented on them. They were about sort of 4 or 5 years old. And they put them in a room on their own. And they said, you can have one marshmallow immediately, or if you can wait 20 minutes, somebody will come back and they'll give you 2 marshmallows. And what they found was really interesting. Those children who could wait, who could control that kind of urge to be gratified immediately, they were the ones who settled well into school, because what school requires us to do is to be bored, to wait, to have patience, to do all those things, because we have intrinsic motivation. We have self-discipline, we want to learn. Those students who can't wait, who need the sticker, the merit, the whatever, those are the ones that will probably cause you most problems when it comes to behaviour. And after the webinar, you might like to go onto my website and you can download, I've got a couple of lists. There's one of sanctions and there's one of rewards. And I've collected ideas from teachers literally around this country, around Europe, and all the different creative things that they do with those kind of rewards and sanctions. And there's some very interesting ways you can reward your students. We don't have time to talk about it here, but the more creative you can be with rewards, the more you will kind of encourage your students to do what you want. Now, begin small when you're using consequences. So don't kind of instantly, it's very tempting, they're messing around again. It's tempting to instantly go, oh, you know, you're all in detention at break time, I've had enough of this. But the problem with that is you instantly get these barriers coming up between you and your students. So start as small as you possibly can. A little look, I call it the deadly stare, a kind of cough, what do you think you're doing? Those kind of things, a little tap on the desk. And especially for those students who like the audience, those ones who want all the others looking at them, you absolutely need to get everybody else on task before you deal with that problem behaviour. And what's interesting with behaviour is we'll often jump on stuff the minute it happens. But I like to say to teachers, if nobody is in immediate danger, then actually often the best response is no response at all, or just a little glance. Because you can get everybody else working and then go and deal with the problem, especially where you've only got one individual causing you problems. Now, I put here about the motorway scenario, and I won't go into great detail about this at the moment because we haven't got time, but basically the notion is this. In the UK, the speed limit on motorways, in theory, is 70 miles an hour. Okay? But the problem is that the police never stop you if you go, say, 80 miles an hour. So what's happened is that the boundary has been moved, and it's just been moved because nobody ever does anything about it. So say I'm going along the motorway at 95 miles an hour. What happens the minute I see a police car up ahead of me? Of course, I slam on the brakes and then I'm going 70. So it's this notion that if you think about your own behaviour, how you drive, how you sometimes bend the rules, you can see what works well when it comes to use of sanctions and use of sort of consequences. And there's quite a lot about that in my new e-book, which I've got the link at the end of this webinar. And it just explains, you know, it's the visual, it's the knowledge that the consequences will be applied. It's quite a complex set of factors going on there. Now, the last thing I want to refer to on this slide is this notion of being flexible. And I met up with a sort of group of other behaviour specialists, I suppose I might be called, and we were discussing this notion that the problem with sort of consistent application of consequences is that if you apply them in exactly the same way to every child, you're forgetting that children are different. So the flexibility isn't in the standards, so everyone listens to each other. The flexibility is in the way that you go about applying those consequences. So, you know, if my very gentle, lovely student is messing around, I might be quite, you know, stop that right now. If it was a student who I know is a real kind of tough nut and they're going to face me up, I might go over to them and say, stop that right now. So it's that flexibility in applying your standards. It's also a flexibility in understanding that behaviour changes. So, you know, on a windy day, on a wet day, you can be flexible in your lessons as well. So looking at my watch, I'm going to move on to the next slide. And the next slide is indeed consistency. So, I know what will happen if I don't get what I want. Where you've said to your students, this is what I want, you have to be absolutely clear about not only how you're going to motivate them to do that, but what is the result of them doing that? If they do misbehave, what exactly is going to happen? And is that actually the same thing every time? So if they know what the consequences are ahead of time, they know what's going to happen every time, and it's the same thing happens every time, then they will eventually learn that that behaviour needs to be avoided. Now you'll see on here I've put be part of the solution rather than part of the problem, and I'd just like to explain what I mean by that. So when I go into schools, I'll chat to teachers and they'll say to me, well, I apply the standards consistently, I always follow through, but in my school there are lots of teachers who don't follow through. So Rob, if we can take another quick sort of vote at this time so everybody gets a chance to get involved. What I'd be interested to know actually, and it's not any reflection on the people listening actually, is in your schools, in your colleges, in the situations where you work, is it the case that other teachers, there are some teachers there who aren't being consistent, who aren't applying the standards, who are letting students get away with things? So that's what I'd be interested to know.
Again, very quick. We've got absolutely, definitely the case. Dress code is an area where teachers differ in our school. We have very weak classroom management. Absolutely, definitely, yes, yes, very much so, definitely, couldn't agree more. There are many that don't follow protocols. Yes, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. Yes, especially on the yard. So yes, I think we can safely agree with that one, Sue.
Brilliant. And I think my answer to teachers when they say that to me, and they'll come to me and say, you know, what do I do? I'm trying to follow through. My answer to teachers is this, you know, be part of the solution. Don't be part of the problem. And it's hard being part of the solution because the kids will say to you, oh, but so-and-so lets us get away with that. It's not fair. Why are you picking on me? But, you know, if you're trying to create this persona for yourself, this teacher character of somebody who is reliable, consistent, wants to make good relationships, then you don't do your students any favours where you let them get away with stuff. Although what I would say is with much older students, sometimes you can do a kind of implied deal. And what I mean by that is where I've been teaching very, very disaffected students who I know that I'm just going to bash my head against the wall if I try and, you know, get the tie sorted, I might go up to them and just very quietly in that individual's ear, I might say, you know, I won't notice that the tie isn't done up properly if you get through X amount of work today. And it just becomes a way of creating a sense with an individual student, not the whole class, but with an individual student, that you do understand that for them the tie is the least of their problems. And actually the fact that they've even got a tie on is a miracle in itself. So it's, again, it's this kind of flexible judgment. Because as teachers, perhaps the key thing to it all is that you know your students as individuals. And that can be hugely difficult if you're teaching in secondary because, I mean, I know as a drama teacher I might have 250 different students, but even if you don't know everything about them, you'll have a feel for how they're going to react. That's not to say, of course, you let them get away with stuff, but it's just that kind of ability to duck and dive just a little bit. Now, here's an interesting one, and we'll get some responses on this one. Aim to treat everyone the same, regardless of personalities, personal feelings and previous behaviour. So, confession time here. I had a student once whose name was, I won't tell you his last name, his first name is Matthew. And he really, really got on my nerves. And I have to be honest and admit that I probably didn't treat him exactly the same as my other students. I tried my hardest, but he was so difficult, he didn't respond. I tried so hard to get through to him. And I suspect a lot of the way I treated him was completely subconscious. And it might have just shown to him in my facial expressions and those kind of things. But I never managed to connect with him. I never managed to bond with him. So here's my question for the listeners. And the question is this. Do you have a student who, if you're honest, gets on your nerves and you quite possibly are not quite as nice or flexible or whatever with that student?
just one. I have lots. I have a couple. Yes, absolutely. I try my best, but sorry, they're going through very quick. I'm losing a few. The student who plucked my nerves most of this year surprised me at the end of the year. That's interesting. I know I sometimes don't treat them exactly the same, but it does help to imagine them as cute little toddlers, sort of how you would imagine their parents would view them. Yes, I wish I only had one. Sure, yes, yes, I try to treat them all the same, but I know I don't. I try to avoid it. Yes, I do. Yes, yes, but at the start of the problem always comes from them, not me. Interesting one. Probably more than one. Wow, this has generated a huge response, Sue. I try to be, they're just coming through so fast. I have in the past, not particularly difficult ones right now, help make a bad relationship like that work by making a point of treating the student nicely. I find I have to keep on top of the little things to avoid escalating. I am actually able to treat everyone equally. I've got one who moans about other students. I try to be, I'm human, even though I try to do otherwise. Sometimes you have to treat them differently. So yeah, huge response, so I can't possibly read them all out.
Okay. What's really interesting, I'll tell you a little story here. I was doing an insert, a training day once in a school down in Kent, and we were discussing this issue that it can be really hard to do it. You try your best, but it can be hard. And I asked we do this little role play, and I asked them for a name, and one of them went, Dan, and literally 100 teachers, 99 of them went, yeah, Dan, oh, we all are, Dan's a nightmare. And so we did this role play, and I showed them how, you know, you tend to treat one maybe slightly differently, even if you're not conscious of it. And at lunchtime, everybody went off to lunch, and one teacher stayed behind, and he came up to me, and he said, I'm just going to go and get something. And when he came back, he had with him this beautiful hand-carved drum case. And he said, do you know what? Dan made this in my design technology lessons. Actually, you know, he's a really nice chap if you get to know. And that really kind of hammered it home to me that every child has either something, you know, something to offer, something to give. We need to give them all that opportunity. And it's kind of trying to look for the best in them, isn't it? And feeling sorry for them rather than getting angry with them. I think that would be the key message. Okay, on to the next of my C's. And the next of my C's is control. So here's a quick question for everybody. On the top left, you'll see control yourself. So confession here, I don't always manage it. So let's have our listeners confess as well. So, you know, do you honestly always manage to keep yourself calm, or do you sometimes slightly lose the plot?
Well, I'll answer first that one. I certainly don't manage to keep calm all the time. 90% of the time, some days it's hard. Wow, you guys are just so responsive. I'm not kidding. The answers are just flying through. I get panicked when I lose control. Definitely not. It's an impossibility. It's so hard. The anger comes out sometimes. I screamed at a kid once and I felt so bad afterwards. By June, yes. No, haha, I've lost it at times. We all lose it. We're about 90% of the time. We're all human. That's coming up quite a bit, actually. I do in the classroom, but I lose it out of the classroom. I'm just going to pick up what Donna said on the last one, actually, which was that it was a student who was giving her a hard time. He'd written in a blog that he didn't want school to end. This was one who obviously the staff had thought was felt quite negative about this student. He'd written in the blog that he didn't want school to end, and he thanked the whole class for helping him do well, and all the staff thought he hated school. So just something to feed back on that last point, Sue. But yeah, I think definitely most people, 95% of the time would agree they can keep control, but definitely do lose control as well.
Yeah, and you know, we are human, and I think it's important for your students to know that and to kind of acknowledge that fact. And I say in some of my books, you know, be willing to apologise when you get it wrong. And there have been times when I've, you know, literally gone back into the class the next day and said to them, look, guys, I'm really sorry. You really wound me up yesterday and I lost my temper. I shouldn't have done that. But, you know, in future, I'd appreciate it if you could try not to wind me up quite so much as well. Now, when it comes to control, a key part of control is this whole verbal and non-verbal communication thing. And Rob was saying to me that last weekend there was a seminar previously who they were talking about NLP, and although I've not read much about NLP, I've been told that I do a lot about it, and this is where the whole verbal and non-verbal thing comes in. I think my best advice here, because I could talk for hours about this subject, but my best advice for you is to try and become aware as you teach of how you are using your voice and your body. So it's almost as though, it's hard to explain, it's almost as though I step outside myself and see myself from the class's eyes. And perhaps it's helped that I've done sort of teacher's TV and those kind of things. So you start to develop an awareness of your verbal tics and whether you're too loud, whether you're too enthusiastic or not enthusiastic enough. But if you can arrange to have yourself filmed, that can be a really useful experience, although you may find that you want to quit teaching the next day because it's not much fun watching yourself live in action. But it's actually really interesting because you probably come across differently to how you imagine. And I think as teachers, it's that ability to know how we're teaching as we teach and to be able to change it. For instance, I'll just give you one example with volume. What a lot of teachers will get trapped in this kind of overly loud volume, and they'll be kind of going to the class like this. And you need to develop the ability to suddenly kind of stop yourself and then bring yourself back in at a kind of lower level. So it's that self-awareness that I think will really help you control that side of things. As I said before, space and layout, control it. Move your classroom around. Especially, you know, if it's your classroom, some of you may have to move from class to class, but if it's your classroom and the layout isn't working, then don't be afraid to change it. Give it a try. You know, put the desks in a U-shape with a block in the middle, put the desks in groups, put the desks in rows, get the students to help you. Move the desks to one side for an impromptu drama session. Don't feel that because it's always been like that, it always has to stay like that. Control your stress levels. Now, the art of selfish altruism, I love this term. What it basically means is, you know when you're on an aircraft and they do the little demo at the start, and they say, adults, fix your own oxygen mask first before you fix those of your children. It's that. That's what it is. You have to practice this art of looking after yourself on the basis that only by doing that will you be able to do the best for your students. Because you can't stay in teaching for 30, 35 years if you allow it to kind of drain the life out of you almost. Then it can, absolutely. You know, if your mission isn't to stay in the classroom, that, you know, maybe you want to do something else within education, then maybe you can give of yourself that much. But I think, you know, stress and workload, for the majority of teachers leaving teaching, it's either behaviour stress or workload. So, you know, be selfish enough to take care of yourself. Don't be a perfectionist. Don't constantly stress if you get things wrong. Just kind to yourself, I suppose, is a good way to put it. And the last one on here is control your lesson. Now, I put there, read the class and adapt to suit. And what I mean by that is that you look at the students that are actually in front of you on that day, at that time, at that moment, and you adapt what you're doing. You don't, in England at the moment, in the UK, we have this obsession with planning lessons. So 9:05, take the register, 9:10, introduce the objectives, 9:15, hand out the books. And, you know, at 9:20, five students turn up late in a really foul mood and everything goes pear-shaped. So, you know, read the situation and allow yourself to adapt. And if that means that the lesson you've planned isn't working, then chuck it away. You know, it's not the end of the world. We used to go, I've been in teaching a little while, and we used to go in the classroom with, like, an interesting resource. Somebody was saying to me yesterday that they found a sheep skull. And they just went into the classroom with it. And they talked about it, and they had the greatest lesson ever, you know. So it's not always about this kind of pre-planned, you know, you can be flexible. In terms of controlling the lesson, refer frequently to time. So think about targets, control the pace. You've got 30 seconds left on this. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, everybody back to me. But at the same time, have moments of slower kind of pace. A really useful rule of thumb for working with young people is that if you take their age and add on 2, so for a 5-year-old, 7, for a 10-year-old, 12, that's roughly their maximum concentration span on a single task. So, you know, that's not to say that they can't do longer tasks, but you need to pull them back together, refer back to the learning objectives, those kind of things. So don't just say to them, you've got 30 minutes, off you go, because they'll take 2 minutes and relax for 28. And control the start and finish of lessons. I think these are two times where the class really get a sense of, you know, what's going on here, what is this teacher like. And in the UK, controlling the start at secondary level might be something like lining them up outside, and as they enter you say good morning and use their names. It might be different where you are, but that would be a classic kind of start to the lesson for me. And finish of lessons, I do like, if I'm in a classroom with chairs teaching English, say, I like them to tuck their chairs in and stand behind their chairs, because it just gives this kind of sense of order and a sense of, you know, we're finishing up, okay, everybody, well done for this. You have this sense of a lesson being, it's almost like a play, isn't it? It has a beginning, it has a middle and an end, not in the sense of plenaries and all that and starters and all that kind of thing, but just in the sense of it has a shape. Okay, next of my C's, moving on to choice. So I referred to this at the beginning, and what we're after here is encouraging students to understand that how they behave is not up to you, it's up to them. And this is a life lesson, isn't it, really? Because if I understand that my behaviour is my behaviour, and it has a consequence and it has an impact, but it's up to me, then when I'm outside of school, if, for instance, your students live in an area where there are gangs, those kind of things, then I have a choice. When they say to me, these friends of mine want you to come with us, be in our gang, I have a choice. I can say yes, I can say no. And with those choices, there will be consequences. So the best way to introduce this notion of choice is simply, it's like using a script. And I'll just explain that to you now. It's the language of choice. So what you do, you look at the misbehaviour, calm yourself down first, take a few breaths, and then you go over to the student. You get up close so they're not everybody else is listening, and you say to them, look, you have a choice, okay? You can stay in your seat, get on with your work, and that would be brilliant, and go to break on time, and everybody will be happy. Unfortunately, if you choose not to do that, then I'll have no alternative but to, and then whatever the sanction is, so keep you in for 5 minutes of break, or, you know, you have to decide what sanction will work, what consequence will work for you. So that's the language of choice, and it can be used in pretty much every situation, even with the whole class. Look, guys, you have a choice. You can listen to me now, or you're going to have to practice listening to me at break. You know, they have the choice, and if you make it clear to them that it's their choice, it's their behaviour, you put yourself in a much, much stronger position. Because at the end of the day, you are in the classroom to teach. That is why you are there. You are not there to manage their behaviour. You need to do that, but that's not why you're there. You're there to teach and to help them learn. I think something else you can do with choice is you can preempt misbehaviour a lot of the time. If you always get a problem, for instance, at the start of your lesson, so if you always have a problem getting the class silent before you start your lesson, then preempt that by starting your lesson in a different way. So for instance, you might, instead of starting by taking the register, you might start with a quick activity on the desks, or you might start by asking 3 students for feedback from the last lesson. So where you're coming up against a kind of barrier, don't just keep banging against it until somebody breaks. You know, think, can I move the barrier aside and walk on through with a different approach? And then I've also put here with choice, and be clear about what the choices are. So often students will try to get you into an argument. So you'll say, I need you to do that, oh, I can't do that because, well, you need to do it, no, I can't do that because, and you get into this discussion and you start reasoning and negotiating with them. And whilst there's no problem with explaining why you're doing things, you don't have to negotiate. You are in charge. You are permitted to say that
okay, we've got a little issue with sound. Just bear with us a few minutes. If you can hear me, can you just hit yes? Okay, just hold on for a few minutes. This sometimes happens with the software we're using. We should get Sue back in just a few minutes. In the meantime, I can sing. I'm afraid I don't know any jokes. Please don't, says Megan. Please no. Or I might just sing. This sometimes goes on for, doesn't normally go on for more than a minute, so if anyone has a joke, please just feed it in and I'll read it out. That's the best I can do with jokes. Okay, here we go. Hi Sue, are you back? Hi Sue? Can you hear me, Sue? Hi Sue, can you hear me? Sue? Sue, if you can hear me, we can't actually hear you, but you could try typing into the response box if you can hear me. Okay, we've lost sound entirely here. Hanani, you're asking, when I ask for participation, is this the way I can post my comments? Yes, it is. You just used the question box there. Sue, if you can hear me, I'm afraid we can't hear you, so can you just type into the question box on the right of your screen? I can see your cursor moving, Sue. I'm guessing you can hear me. Let's see if I can do anything from this end. Just bear with us, please, Pete.
Hello, Rob, can you hear me?
Ah, yes, we've got you back, Sue. Hi. Can you hear
me?
Sorry,
when did you lose me?
No, we lost you back. No, it was only a few minutes ago, actually. But that's the longest it's ever gone off for, actually. I was almost unnerved. Well done, everyone, for staying with us. And well done, Sue, for keeping calm as well. That was a perfect lesson in keeping calm in the classroom. Well done. I think we got... it was the last one of your points on that slide, actually, I think.
Okay, so that was the choice slide.
That's right, it was, yes. Thank you.
Okay, sorry about that, everybody. I'm out in the sticks here. You're lucky to get me at all. So, choice. I was talking about...
It was about negotiating, how you don't need to negotiate.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, to just finish that point, it's this sense that, you know, it's up to you what happens in your classroom. So, whilst you need to be reasonable, what you don't need to do is kind of negotiate everything. It's not, you know, some stuff doesn't need to be discussed. You're the teacher, you can say to them politely, you're not some kind of, you know, dictator, but this is I like to say, it's not a democracy, it's kind of a benign dictatorship. So you're in charge, and you don't have to reason with them. Okay, so before I lose everybody else again, I'll move on to my last slide. So this is my favourite, and this is creativity, and I love being creative as a teacher. So I think it's that sense of, you know, where there's a problem, yes, I might use a reward, yes, I might use a sanction, but I might use something completely different. And I'll just tell you a really quick story here. I had this group of boys once, 13-year-olds, and we were doing English. And pretty much all of the class had special needs of some kind. So they would turn up without a pen. And the reason they were turning up without a pen is because they didn't want to write, you know. Typical, you know, if you've got a difficulty, then you're going to try and avoid having to do that thing. So I tried rewards. Well done, everybody. You brought a pen. You have a sticker. Oh, it's all right, man. It's not really into stickers. I tried sanctions. If you forget to bring a pen, I'll keep you in, yada, yada, yada. And they would go to me, okay, miss, well, I can do your detention Wednesday week. I'm a bit busy at the moment. So... what I ended up doing is I got this little kind of set of pink fluffy pens, and when they would turn up without a pen, I would say, well, you know, you could probably borrow one off a friend, or you can borrow one of Miss Cowley's pink fluffy ones, boys. What do you fancy? And that soon solved the pen thing, because they were like, no, I'll get a pen off my friend, thank you very much, miss. So it's that sense of, you know, if this approach isn't working, then I need to try something else. And it's not one single pathway that will work for you. You might need to think laterally about what you can try with different individuals. I think the other thing with creativity is to take risks in your teaching, to try things that are unusual. And teachers will sometimes say to me that I tried something once and the class were awful. They couldn't cope with it. And I'll sort of say to them, yeah, but you've only given them one chance, and it was the first time they'd done that kind of thing. So could you try again? Could you do it on a smaller scale? Could you just do it for 5 minutes? Could you take a few risks? And if you look at my website after this session, there's a page called Lessons I Love, and it's about some bizarre lessons that I've done and that other teachers have told me about. And, you know, if you want to get students behaving well, then it's important that they feel engaged and that they have fun, not all the time. And it's a kind of balance, as I said at the start. So, you know, some of the time we're focused, we're disciplined, we practice our writing, we do all those things we need to do that might not be so exciting. But other times, you know, absolutely, I want you to be engaged, I want you to have fun, it's multi-sensory, it's varied, it's active. And this is a key message, I think, in all my books, is it's the notion that you You need to feel confident that you are a creative professional who has a professional judgment about things, and don't let other people tell you that that's wrong, this is wrong. You know, believe, have faith in your own judgment about what you can try with your students. So my last slide just gives you a couple of links, a couple of contacts. I always say, I'm probably a bit mad really, I always say that if anybody ever emails me and they have a problem, I'll always try to get back to them with some kind of solution. You know, it's not a kind of paid for service or anything. I just like to think that if there's teachers out there who are having problems, and I'll get emails from all over the world, that I'm quite happy to take a minute or two of my time and just throw back some suggestions. So you're welcome to go onto my website and download. There's lots of free resources on there, and there's no registration required, although if you want to join my mailing list, then you just literally you can do that via the contact page. You can email me, that's my email address there. And then as I said, I've just published this Kindle ebook. It's my first foray into self-publishing, so this is something I've just set up all by myself. And it's available at amazon.co.uk over here, or it's also available on the main Amazon site. And I think they publish on some of the EU sites as well, so I think as of Spain, Italy, those sort of places, you can get hold of that. And it's just a little mini guide to my 7 C's, so it's very, very cheap. It's about £1.50, something like that. Okay, Rob, I think you're going to gather some questions for me, and I'll do my best to answer them. I'll probably be flooded with emails now as well, which is fine. I really don't mind.
Sue, I will do that. I'll put the questions up in a moment. I just want to say, because we'll probably not have too much time for the questions, I just want to start by saying a huge thank you on behalf of everyone who's here present for you giving up your time freely. Those of you that don't know, the speakers through Classroom Expert give their time freely to share their ideas with you all. So thank you, Sue, for a tremendous webinar. I mean, it's been absolutely fantastic. I'm just going to read you out some of the comments we've been getting through because they really sum up exactly how I feel. That was one of the clearest, most easy to follow, very professional webinars you've done, one of the most seamless, enjoyable webinars you've done. Thank you so much. Great webinar. I've got a message from Karen at Birmingham Metropolitan College, who says, great session setting this up. Sue visited us in December and inspired our entire teaching staff. This is a great follow-up. Would recommend Sue to all. Brilliant, inspirational session. Thanks for today. I'm just getting flooded here, Sue, with thank yous. Excellent talk. Brilliant. The 7 C's book is a must to read and keep on your bookshelf. What I'll do, Sue, is I'll record all these and I'll send them back to you because they really are just wonderful comments. And can I just pass on before I go on to the questions, also from Karen. She's saying that she wants to share with you all that Birmingham Metropolitan College, we have an Olympics event today. Our principal, Christine Braddock, is running with the torch today, and two of our students have already run with it. Have a great day, everyone. You can follow them on Twitter at BMET Teacher Talk. So thanks for that. I just thought that was worthy of a mention. Okay, I'm going to switch the presenter back to me. Those of you that want to get Sue's Kindle book, obviously that is quite a long link to type in. Quite a difficult link.
They can't click through on it, okay.
So if you go to Amazon Kindle and just search for the 7 C's of positive behavior management, you'll find Sue's book there. If you just search for Sue Cowley on Amazon, you'll find all her books there. And obviously she's been very kind enough to share her personal email, so sue@suecowley.co.uk if you've got any problems. And obviously if you go to the website suecowley.co.uk, you can find out about all her work there. Right, Sue, I'm going to change the presenter back to me, so I don't think you have to do anything. I think it just comes straight back. Okay. Show my screen. Can you all see that slide? Sue, can you see that? 7 C's of behavior management and your books? Yes.
Yes, yeah, should I close it? Okay, sorry. There we go. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Right, so the questions. These were questions that we had sent in through Classroom Expert, and what I did was I sent them to Sue at very short notice. I knew she had a great webinar to share, and I didn't honestly think we'd have too much time to do questions at all, but I think if you're happy, Sue, we can certainly do a few, and I thought I'd just let you take your pick, Sue, to choose any of those you like and maybe give us some pointers on them, if that's okay.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, let's start. Well, I'll whiz through them all. I'll give you the benefit of my judgment where that is.
Thank you.
Okay, so how do I manage a very large class? I think, you know, try and get them to do some of the work for you. So split them up into groups, get them up at the front doing some presenting to the rest of the class. Think about how you group them. So are you grouping them by ability? Are you having group leaders within the class? When you say very large, I'm not sure whether you mean sort of 35 or 150, because I'm not sure which country this comes from. I think with a very large class, there needs to be a real clarity of message. So, you know, when I'm talking, I need everybody to listen. And I need you to listen because there are lots of you and we can't all talk at once. So I think have a real clarity of expectation about listening and think about your groupings. Any ideas on how to manage with limited or no resources? Do you know what? I'll tell you a funny story here. Anything can be a resource. And literally, I was at this this training day yesterday with these Senkos, and I was looking for a resource for this activity I do about creative planning, and I couldn't find one for the last table. And then you know what I came across? I'd bought a pack of two cream scones, which is like a type of English cake, and I'd only eaten one, and the other one I was just going to chuck away. And I thought, do you know what? That's a really good resource. And we got some great learning out of it. So I would say think laterally about what a resource is. You know, a sheep skull, a pebble, some shells. I'll go to my house and just look around and go, oh, that'll do, that'll do, that'll do. So, you know, it's thinking imaginatively, creatively. How do you manage when students aren't interested in the topic? I would say find a way to make the topic relate to something that they are interested in. So, for instance, you know, if they're into Facebook, do a Facebook page on the topic. So it doesn't have to be the topic itself. It can also, you can link it into things that they're into. So again, it's about creative thinking. Somebody's got a very challenging class with students constantly fighting and arguing. And getting them to be more respectful and not so negative towards each other, that's got a lot to do with using activities in class that require cooperation in order to succeed. So things like these activities where they have to get a chair across the room, but they can only do it if they work together as a team. I think also not allowing disrespectful language, so have a very clear sanction. So if somebody calls somebody else something inappropriate, there's an absolute clarity. If you say that word, unfortunately, it's your choice, you made a bad choice, this is what's going to happen. That's a real long-term one, because you're looking at negative relationships that you're going to have to change. How do I talk to kids who are afraid of making mistakes and losing face? You know, I think there are some kids who just don't want to be put on the spot. And I think my perspective on that as a drama teacher, sometimes you'll get kids who they don't want to get involved in drama. And rather than putting them on the spot and forcing them to get involved, what I tend to do is let them come to it in their own time. So don't put them on the spot. Give them opportunities if they want to join in, but don't push it. Allow them to come to it in their own time. FE College, staff who teach mainly well-behaved adults don't have experiences of youngsters. Misbehavior tends to escalate where the adult is unconfident and unclear about what they want. So it's not about aggression, and it's encouraging staff to see that it's not about being aggressive. It's about clarity. It's about being assertive. This is what I need from you. If you choose not to do it, this is what will happen. And then you just don't get pulled into the arguments. You choose not to hear it. If they're, Miss, I'm not doing that, you just don't hear it. You don't have to hear everything that they say. I mean, NQT is going to be supply teaching in September. Oh, good luck, good luck, good luck. I tell you what, that will make your teaching career, because you will be forced to instantly become very good at managing behaviour. I have done supply teaching. If I get the thing you need with supplies, you need to read the class and the school almost instantly, because you don't know them. So you go in there, and if you read the class as being basically they're going to mess you around for an hour, something I have tried is I'll say to them, come to the front if you'd like to learn something today. And do you know what happens? 90% of the class will come to the front. So I'll get them off, I'll get them started on activity, and then I'll go to the back and I'll say to the ones who haven't got involved, okay, I'm going to take a note of your name and I'll be passing this on to whoever. Yeah. The other thing you can do is ask, if it's secondary, ask a head of department whether you can refer, use their name. So you might say to the class, Mr. Smith has said he'd like a bit of feedback on the class after the lesson. So it's finding ways to let the kids know that, you know, you are hooked into the school systems. The minute you get in the school, get a copy of their behaviour policy and have a quick read as well. Okay, and the last of the questions on here, NQT year finished, new start, getting off to the best start with your classes, secondary English, you sound like me. So I think, you know, plan out your This Is Me speech. Good morning everybody, I'm Miss Cowley. There's only three rules in my class, but I'm going to make sure these three things happen. And say it through, before you're in front of the class, don't wait till you're in front of the class. Stand in front of a mirror or just talk to your computer like I'm doing now. And say, you know, this is me, this is what I'm going to be like, yeah? And the other thing I'd do in your first lesson is find a really fun, short activity that helps you learn something about the students themselves. So I don't know if this is very PC, Rob, but I sometimes do like an obituary. So I say, I want you to write your obituary about all the amazing things that you did during your life. And it just gives you a little feel for what those students are like when you first meet them before you really get to know them. Okay, I did all eight. Wow.
Hey, well done. Well done. Just picking up on your last one there, Sue, I've got to mention that I know I mentioned this to you earlier when we were speaking a few weeks ago, but my favourite, well, one of the most favourite exercises I got from you was the dog food can. The can of dog food where you put in jelly mixed with Maltesers and things, and Mars bars, wasn't it, all chopped up. And my kids absolutely loved that. It was just brilliant. I used it for years, you know. It was fantastic. That's in Getting the Buggers to Behave, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. Right, listen, we've gone on long enough. You've gone on long enough. You've given a lot of your time, so thank you for that. I'm just going to go to the last slide that I've got. And I'm sorry, those of you that have been sending in questions since then, I think we're going to have to draw a line there. So there have been so many brilliant comments from people just saying thank you. I'll just say thanks to Sue once more on your behalf because I know you want me to. Sue, it's been wonderful. But I also want to thank everyone for being on the call. Now, I see, obviously, the names popping up in the question box, and I see the same names as well as new people as well. But it's so wonderful to have such a committed, positive bunch of people. And I want to thank you all for putting your time in. I know for some of you it's very early in the morning, it's the middle of the night, it's different times obviously to Sue and I, but I just want to thank you all for joining us. And please tell your friends that there is a replay available for the next week or so. I think I'm going to keep this one up a little bit longer because we're getting towards the summer holidays and we won't have too many more on through the summer holidays. If you tell them to just come to classroom-expert.com, they will be able to get the free replay and download everything that's been going on today. Now, if you want to get Sue in your school or you want to get more from Sue, she gave her web address and I've just repeated it there. It's suecowley.co.uk. You can also get in touch with us and Hazel will sort out something for you if you want to get Sue in your school. Obviously, either direct to Sue or come through to us and we'll pass you on to Sue. I also just want to thank Hazel and Chris. Hazel for all the organisational work she does and also Chris for all the technical aspects. These things couldn't happen without Hazel and Chris, so thanks to them as well. And please, those of you that are members and non-members, we are going to be hosting a few events over the summer. We're doing some open mic sessions where you will be able to share your ideas. They won't be very long, but basically if you want to register your interest and you've got something you want to share with somebody else, with other teachers, then you'll be able to do that during our open mic sessions, and that's for members and non-members. So you can just come on air and you can either do it with a PowerPoint or you can just do it over the mic and share some ideas with colleagues. So that's a great chance to share good practice. More details about those will be up very soon on the Classroom Expert site. We're also doing some short punchy tutorials, 10-minute tutorials, where it will literally just be 10-15 minutes on a key topic. And again, more details will come out about those very soon. We've got a fantastic autumn schedule coming up that Hazel's putting together as I speak. Some brilliant speakers coming up September, October, November, so please stay tuned for that. And if you don't want to miss any of those, then please get a membership. If you go to behaviourneeds.com/member, you'll be able to get recordings of them, open mic sessions, the 10-minute tutorials, and all the webinars. Okay, this call hasn't actually been attended by Ozzy the dog. For some reason, he hasn't joined us today, but it's the first time he hasn't been absent. But once again, I'll just say thank you to everyone. We've got a lot of wonderful comments coming through. I'm going to save all these. Sue, I'll forward them on to you, and we can catch up soon, yeah? We'll have a chat.
Okay, thanks, Rob.
Thank you so much, Sue. Is there anything you want to say before you go?
Just thanks for everybody who came along, and hope it was useful.
It definitely has been. Sue, I'm going to read a few more out. From beginning to end, it was an amazing seminar. Thank you, Sue. This was my first. I will come back again for more. All comments like that, Sue. Brilliant. Thank you so much, everyone. Thanks to Sue. That's us signing off for today. Thank you. And now those of you who are regular attendees will know that it takes me ages to close these things down. Wait while I find the close button. Where is it? Okay, stop recording. That's the first one.